areas that I think we could do better. So Romans 12, 1 through 2, many of us know it well, but therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. I really do think that passage is like the most comprehensive way to describe what it looks like once we receive the gospel and start living our lives. And I do think as a church community, as our household, we think about our households, I think just the question of how do we resist the pattern, it's not patterns, but pattern of this age, whatever it is, whatever current is going in the direction away, not God's current, we should resist that, say no, and we should look for ways that we could align ourselves with God's good, pleasing, and perfect will. And I think that what I love about this passage too, and I think as it relates to parenting, is, I mean, I'm fearful about raising kids in this generation, this culture, and this, Paul's not fearful. He doesn't seem fearful, at least in his language. There's times when he's even more urgent about it, but it's not, there's no exclamation points in the Greek or in the English. It's just don't conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And I think conformity and transformation, like there's an obvious, more compelling pathway there, like conforming to something versus transformation. And going through all of this, if I could just say one thing, is like we have to be better at casting a compelling vision for following Jesus. Like I think if I could say one thing about parents and the church as a whole is I think there are times when I don't think we actually believe that following Jesus is better. Like I think we think it's better the way that like some nutritious food is better, but not like a rich feast would be better. I guess some, before I get in, it's obvious every family has unique challenges and needs, but I do think there's aspects of life in our cultural moment that are especially like pressing, and that's where these five initiatives come from. And then I think the main things are just intentionality, prayerfulness, and I would say staying together in it. And that's another kind of theme that I'm getting at is these initiatives are not like, there's a version of it where it's like we have to think about our little household and you can't really think beyond that. There's another version of it where I think we need to think more broader of like how can we seek more alignment with each other. And I do think generations before, I even think of like growing up, I had a sense that there were families around us that they were kind of on the same page with most things, like movies to watch or even church, like what the expectation is in terms of going to church on Sundays. And I think my sense is like we're even more individualistic in how we approach church community now and how we church even values as we follow Jesus, which is honestly terrifying. Because we can all be thinking that we go to the same church and that we're aligned in how we live our life, but functionally, we're all kind of in our own universe that is more connected to kind of who we're following, what we're reading, whatever it is, than like, no, we actually like are in the same room together, we worship together, we do these things. So I think some of you older mentors and things, like you probably have examples of families that you kind of try to do life with, and it can be messy and things like that, but I do think that's a big part of how this works is I think more alignment together, which goes to my first point. I have no slides, so I'll repeat it. The first one would be family and community rule of life. So you may be familiar with rule of life. It's kind of coming back in vogue in terms of what that name is from like second century. But a rule of life is a schedule and set of practices, habits, and relational rhythms that help us create space in our busy lives to grow in our discipleship to Jesus. So this isn't new. Throughout church history, all followers of Jesus have been like, how do we zig where the culture zags? How do we live intentionally? But I think now more than ever, because of how individualistic we are and being in Protestant evangelical stream of the church, we've in some good ways resisted kind of the more institutional rhythms that the church has done. But I think losing some of that tradition that comes with that has left us like very on our own islands, which I think is its own danger. Maybe more dangerous than legalism these days, but that would just be my take. So The other thing is you already have a rule of life. You already have one of these, whether you're aware of it or not. You have a functional rule of life, the way that you live. So it's more that we should be more intentional about regularly assessing our life and then make adjustments towards Christ. So the word rule is not like rules, but regula is the Latin word, which is like a trellis or like a ruler, something that you measure against or something that trains like vines to grow up. So if you think about it, it's like how we organize our life. Is it allowing for the vine to bear fruit in our life, or are we stifling some of that growth because of how we're doing it? Is one way to think about it. So this includes things like assessing church involvement. Like, do you have a value? Or is it kind of like we go when we go and we don't when we don't? And I'm not saying that everyone needs to be here every single Sunday or you have to be a part of a home group, whatever it is. I do think we should figure out what's the minimum standard. But I do think that, if you don't have one and you're just kind of like we go when we feel like it, that can be kind of dangerous. And I will say that will create a dynamic when you want your kids to go to church. That makes a thing. Service, like, does your family serve? And that can be each other. That can be outside of the home. That could be anything. But those are questions to ask. Sports, I'll just say I already feel it with my 5-year-old in soccer and the feeling of like, wait a second, you're telling me that we have this practice then and this, that, whatever it is. But a lot of families, it's like, and this was me growing up. Sorry, Mom, you're in here. But you just kind of go with the flow of like what's doing. And if you're good enough, you make this team. And then this team requires this schedule. And then you're kind of like, well, I guess we're doing the club thing, right? And I played sports that nobody likes, so there's no club team. I played football. But volleyball, softball, soccer, whatever it is, like you kind of just like get into that. And the coach is like, you need to be here every day of the week. And you're like, okay. And then the youth pastor says, you should be here on Wednesdays. And you're like, whoa, the church is oppressive. How can you say it? No, I'm just kidding. We have no leverage, you know? But sports, I think, just thinking about, like, how does your family think about sports? How should followers of Jesus think about sports and competition and where that falls in line or any extracurricular in that regard? Technology, I'll talk about in a second. Obviously, education is not one of my 5, like school choice, not on my 5 initiatives, but just the thing. Church community. So church involvement, like when do you go to church? Church community, how do you participate in that? Spiritual practices, work and rest rhythms, holidays. The main thing with this is every aspect of your life you could essentially be more intentional about as it relates to following Jesus and kind of think about how this fits into your rule of life. But the main question is that I would say is if you had a date night specifically set aside for this and you said, list out all the things you do as a family and just ask the question, why do we do this? Can we do this in a way that orients our family more towards Jesus? And then who can we ask for help or who can we be more aligned with? I think those 3 questions are just interesting to ask of as we look at our life more intentionally. And then I would say have a working document. Like Nat and I have kind of a family mission statement and then a working document of thinking through like all the way, and I'm a little more granular with mine because I'm probably more sinful and messed up, but I'm like what time I want to wake up in the morning and all these different things. And most of it I don't even follow, but just thinking about as a family and as your life, like food, how you eat, like all of those things are related to the rule of life. So I think individually as a family, you need to talk about that. But I think the like secret sauce that I hope for like 10 years from now is that not in like a way where it feels like if you're not following the Grace Fellowship rule of life, then you're not in the club, but more of like, what are some like let's raise the minimum standard of discipleship to Jesus to where it's not like baffling to have a Sabbath as a family or to have morning time or whatever it is, whatever those things are. So more on that, but write questions down, whatever. Next thing. So first one is family and community rule of life, being more intentional about everything. Immersion in scripture and prayer. This would be like priority number 1 on the rule of life is not just like we'll fit worship, scripture and prayer in like when we can, but really being intentional about it and not just like read the Bible or read stories about the Bible. I love all the kids' storybook Bibles and we just got a new, what's the new one we got from as a gift from someone in here? It's awesome. But Bible stories are great. I think one of the shifts I would love to see is the church's responsibility for teaching the Bible, I would say, is actually more of a reinforcement and like a like the minimum standard of like, we are reading the Bible every week together, going through the Old Testament, the New Testament, memorizing scripture monthly. But where it sticks is in the home. Whether you're taking everything we're learning here on Sundays and kind of, hey, this month we're memorizing this passage because that's what we're doing together at church. I think that alignment's really cool. But it won't, I promise you, the 30 days you come to church aren't enough for your kid to know the Bible. Like, it's just not even close. And they will not have a relationship to the Bible that views it as relevant for their life long term, unless, one, it's relevant to you and they see you immersed in it, but also bringing them in on it and trying things. Like, it's kind of like if you're interacting with the scriptures and in prayer, like, there's not one way to go about it. The more you're doing it, the better. But there should be a sense that the story of God and communion with God is kind of the foundation that you're living from. So you have the normal, like, points in the day of, like, meals for prayer and bedtime for prayer. Maybe you have rhythms of reading scripture already, whatever that may be. But it doesn't need to be this grandiose, like, family Bible study, although it could be. But at the very least, like, read the Psalms together, memorize scripture together. You should be memorizing whatever the children's ministry is memorizing. You should memorize it with them. I think those are just things where, as a family, you're just interacting with the scriptures in a lot of different ways. Read the storybook Bibles, read the actual scripture. Nat's, we've been trying to find a rhythm. Lily's just kind of old enough now where she is willing to submit to the, like, the morning time. And we've been trying it, and Nat's been just trying, like, a bunch of different ways of reading different stories, reading during lunchtime. So it's not like we've figured it out. And I don't really know anyone who's, like, figured it out. But I do see a difference in kids who grow up where it's just normal for the Bible to be read in the home, for prayer to just spontaneously happen and happen with rhythms. Like, both are great. Of have liturgies, have like, nighttime, you say this written prayer that you memorize together. And then during the day, just pray randomly when you're, like, anxious for what's going on right in front of you or whatever it may be. So I think modeling that is really good. And obviously with all of these things, like, there's a version to, like, take this and be like, hey, I need to do this for my kids. The main thing is, like, you need to do this for yourself. And then your kids will just, it'll rub off on them probably. And if not, they'll at least have an anchor point to do that. So yes, be intentional with your kids with that. But also we need to be immersed in it. And I think also simple framing of, like, scripture is we learn about the story of God, and that's, like, our story now. Prayer is communication and communion with God. It's being with God. Like, having simple, like, definitions that are also not overly simplified, I think are really, it's really helpful. So, and everything I'm saying, I'm trying to do with my own family. So, I am an expert, though. So, okay, wisdom with technology. I'll just say one name that I really trust, Andy Crouch. Anything he's written, anything he does, he's so legit as a human being, it seems, to the point where I just listened to him on a podcast, and it was like the end, and they're like, where can they find you? And he's like, oh, I'm trying to practice, and, like, I don't know, but usually when people have me on, they'll let you know when I'm around. Like, he's just super humble and awesome, but I think his idea is not technological abstinence, but wisdom, just wisdom as it relates to technology. And technology is, like, I'm not advocating for not using washers and dryers anymore, if you want to have a TV or not have a TV, I think there's good reasons for both, whatever it is. My wife's addicted to sports, so we have a TV. Otherwise, we wouldn't. But yeah, I think it's helpful to recognize, like, in the span of human history, the iPhone hasn't even been around 20 years, and how much, like, we're just, like, so beyond talking about the iPhone. Like, it's just not even something we think about. Obviously, AI revolution is happening in our midst as our kids are growing up. And yeah, I think it's important for us to seek wisdom on that. What I will say, these are super helpful, straight from Andy Crouch, who also stole it from philosopher Albert Borgman. And he basically makes the distinctions between technology as instruments and technology, like, devices. So instruments are tools that require skill, effort, engagement. They draw you into reality. They build competence and character. They connect you to the process. So these are things like the piano, although we just got a keyboard for free, and it's, like, the worst. They can play music on it. But something that requires skill. In order to make music happen, you got to play a chef's knife, right? There's a lot of kitchen gadgets, but there's something about learning how to cut bicycle cameras with manual settings, things like that. It's not saying that things that are more technological than that are bad. It's just saying he would say prioritize things that require skill and engagement over things that are devices that deliver instant results with no effort, frictionless interface. Like we're like so there right now. Replace engagement with consumption. So social media, if you think about Facebook when it first happened, or even MySpace back in the day for my MySpace users, top 8, still to this day, the most destructive social thing ever to happen. But kids aren't on social media anymore. Just to say, to reframe it for a second, kids are not on social media the way we may think about social media. They use Snapchat mostly, which is how they communicate. You could call that social media, but it's just another messenger type thing. They are on like numb consumption media is how all the social media companies, like Facebook was your actual friends connecting on digitally, right? And then it expanded and it's like, you're not really friends. And but it's kind of fun to see like what the guy from high school is doing now, you know, whatever it is. But kids now, obviously it's scrolling. And it's high engagement, quick things. They're not on TikTok to connect with friends. Like, they're just not. That's not why they're on it. So it's not even engagement. It's consumption. And then I think the promise, and this is where it comes with parents, convenience and control. Technology and devices can offer that. And I think the thing that's that Andy Crouch talks about, he just talked about it on the podcast Raising Boys and Girls, who's just on it. So you can look him up on that, and a lot of what I'm saying right now he talks about. But he talks about basically how he is concerned about kids on devices, but when the questions are coming up, he's more concerned about parents who use devices either with their kids or with themselves to just make life with kids easier. And I think we could all probably accept the reality that that's a temptation, right? To throw the kid in front of the TV. And I'm saying this to you moms, I get it. But I think that to justify a device as something that isn't that harmful for them, it's understandable to help make cleaning the kitchen easier in a moment. But I would say leave the kitchen, make your husband clean it later, and be with your kid. So streaming services, smartphones, social media, things like that are obviously all that. But I think just recognizing the question that Andy Crouch is always asking is, how is this thing shaping us, this technology? No technology is neutral. They're designed for a certain purpose. And they're usually designed to remove effort, reduce skill, and weaken our engagement. So his big thing is, devices are subtly reshaping us into passive consumers unless we intentionally limit and use them for different things. So his four things, if you want to write these down or just read his book, TechWise Family or The Life We're Looking For: delay smartphones. And I would say 100%, it's changed where like I used to be like, my kids will never have a smartphone, but now they can't have a job without one. So it's like really tricky, but most of us hopefully know like there are tremendous ways. Like my smartphone is so dumb that it's great. And Natalie has a password and I can't really do anything on it other than certain apps that are actually helpful and whatever it is. And so, but delay smartphones, I would say you can definitely delay until high school. I don't think they need it. Most of the reasons you would want it is to track them. And I would say that's understandable. I think Skechers, which are like the worst brand, but I think they have a shoe now with the trackable thing or like, I don't know. but I'm just saying like most parents where I'm like, why'd you give your junior hire a phone? Which it's not a phone. I think that's another reframing is like this, like I would just say, do not ever call this a phone. And I'm trying to correct this even with my kids, but it has a phone on it, but it's mostly not that. It's a computer. And to give a junior hire a computer, so there's really dumb phones you can give them. I'm not saying if you give your kid a phone, you're evil or you're wrong or whatever it is. But delay smartphones as long as you can and have a good reason for why I use it. Keep devices out of bedrooms. That includes yours. I think one is just like really good for rest, but also I'm trying not to like be too strong about this, but if you have or eventually have kids where there's any devices, including TVs in their bedroom, that would be like one minimum standard I would say that cannot happen. It just should not happen. There's no reason, there's no justifiable reason for any screen to be in any bedroom for us or for them. But I think that solves a lot of things. One story Andy Crouch talks about in one of his books is a awful story, but basically he was more framing like back in the day, you have a nightmare or you're anxious, which is like a normal thing for adolescents to go through. The normal move is like maybe a few nights of anxiety in the bedroom and then you're like, I gotta go talk to mom and dad. And that's not happening for kids who have a phone. Either because they're just numbing out and trying to fill the void, or because they're asking their phone, what do I do about the boy at school who's bullying me? Or what do I do about the friends that aren't good friends or whatever it is? So just that relational miss when you give the device for those kind of things. And that's more and more what they're being designed for, is engagement and feedback from AI and things like that. Have one screen in the house, so one TV if you have a TV. Obviously have a place to put your phones and things like that. And then protect shared time like dinner. Andy Crouch painted a pretty compelling vision on the podcast list to do of his family. They would just light candles, kind of as a symbol of like we turning everything off. They turn all the lights off and they just light a bunch of candles and the kids would help light candles. So I don't know if we're gonna do that, but I think we should try it sometime. But I think just the idea of technology is not just a tool, it's a formative system and it's not neutral. There's design in a certain direction to shape our attention, our desire, our relationships, our imagination. And the question isn't like, is this good or bad? It's what kind of people is it forming us to become? And I do think that's like how we should ask everything, like including food. And I mean, if you think about like how we talk about food consumption and like if kids grow up thinking red 40 and refined sugar is going to give them schizophrenia, but moderate amounts of The Bachelorette and TikTok are like maybe healthy for them, then I think, I don't know. But sorry, Mom, red 40 is bad. I know it's, yeah, we're not, yeah, okay. But it's a question of who are you becoming? And I think that relates to food and it relates to definitely that kind of stuff. All right, two more. Holy sexuality is the next one. And yeah, I mean, even saying sexuality and like we all have our own wit, like stuff we bring to that either in our own life or how we were raised or how we it talked about it or didn't talk about this. And I would just say holy sexuality is the vision. What I mean by that is sexuality that's in line with God's good design for sexuality. And if there's anywhere that we could grow in a compelling vision and just like normal conversations, I would say this is one of those areas. So I'll give you the junior high sexuality talk in 1 minute. Are you ready for it? Okay. We are made in the image of God, full of inherent worth and dignity, and we're embodied souls. Our body is a part of who we are. We're male and female, and that's how it is. We're different but equal in value and worth, but diverse in how we express those differences. God designed all sexual activity to be expressed in the relational container that is marriage between one man and one woman for life. And we live in a broken world, and there's always forgiveness from God and invitation to a life of flourishing and holiness, and not just in our sexuality, but all of life. Purity in sexuality does not make us pure, purity, whatever that means. We all sin and fall short of the glory of God, and we should seek sexual integrity that's in line with God's vision. There you go. So it's that easy. You can talk to your kids about that every day. But I would say I have a five-year-old, and she asked me what was underneath my penis, right? And like opportunity to talk, sorry, I'm not like naked with my kids, okay? It was in the bathroom, she walked in. But like, I could either choose to be like, these are my dingleberries and you'll find out later. Or I could say, these are testicles and they regulate my hormones and they make it possible for me to fertilize mom's eggs. And she's like, okay. But I think like, I will just say this, like, there's everyone's taboo about sexuality. It's just the world has shifted to where it's like, we're going to be taboo about it, but then like at some point like exploration happens, and that's how we figure out what sex is, and it's insane. But I don't think most Christian families have a different vision other than like a certain set of principles, like don't have sex till later. But in terms of like how to like pitch what sexuality is, like obviously like male and female differences are as obvious as anything. Obviously there's complexity here, and there's people who've written good books on this, and there's a lot going on in this, but I do think just recognizing like male and female, like God has designed us male and female, and that's beautiful. And why did he do that? We can discover together. But private parts and body parts are pretty darn normal on every human being, and we should talk about them using the actual language. We had a high schooler one time who thought his penis was called a wee willy wanker, and or something along those lines. Legitimately, it was that? Okay. So I just think like, If we're going to be afraid to talk, I think that says more about our own sense of shame about our bodies and sexuality, which is a real thing we have to work through. But our kids like need our help to figure out like, what does it mean to be a woman? What does it mean to be a boy? And I think erring on the side of talking more about it is way better. Talking about beauty and how we're all different shapes and sizes, but beauty is inherent. And so make a plan. There's a natural progression. If they ask you, we're erring on the side of we're just going to tell them. If Lily asked me tomorrow how her baby's made, I'm going to tell her. I'm not going to go into details. I'm not going to overdo it on terms. Yeah, I'm not going to do that. But the as minimum baseline as I can, I'm going to describe what happens. And that gives me context to be like, and that's, it, yeah, powerful, right? That's exactly why God designed sex for marriage, not marriage for sex, right? It's something we have to steward well, and that's the relational container for that, and that's something mommy and I have to work through together. And it's so discern timing, better or to err on the side of sooner than they're ready. If you have boys, I would say real quick. If you have girls, maybe use discernment and wait a little bit. But I would for girls, I would say more on the side of you should be regularly talking to them about how beautiful their body is, how beautiful their vagina is, how they're going to have a period one day and we're going to have a party. Like all of those kind of things should be happening. For boys, boners. Like I don't have a son, but I imagine he would have boners. And you should talk about them, and that one day you're going to want to touch it a lot, and let's talk about that. So regular conversations I think are better. I'm not giving a sex talk right now, but okay. Okay, last one, before I say too much. Meaningful rites of passage. This one might be just the most fun of them, but you have, every culture has had rites of passage. So you have like the really cool ones or scary ones like Maasai tribe killing a lion. If they're going to be a man, they have to kill a lion or they'll get killed by the lion. So think about that, moms. You think like, yeah, anyways. Okay. I'm not saying these are good, but Native Americans, they would throw a week-long party for a young girl when she starts her first menstrual cycle, and they would bring her gifts and honor her with affirmation and give her a new adult name. I think we should do that. I think it's pretty cool. Ancient Hebrew culture, obviously, large sections of the Torah would be memorized and recited in front of the community to show them that they're like, I know the story. And we have nothing. So we have birthdays. We have Christmas, but even that's, you know, but these are distinctive moments that mark maturity. And if we don't, they will seek to self-initiate with peers. So I think like alcohol, sexual activity, all those kind of things, I can think in my own life. And I definitely look at high schoolers and junior hires and they are not like, ooh, alcohol is compelling to me. They're like, I want to feel like an adult. And what do the adults do around me? They drink alcohol together and they have conversation. And then it goes to binge drinking because they don't have the control. Or sexual activity, what do adults do? They have sex. So I think there's a level of like, those things can be used as self-initiation because they look out and they're like, well, what are older people doing? And they're like, okay, I'll do that. Peter David Gross, he's really helped us shape kind of our philosophy of youth ministry over the years. He started an organization called Christian Adulthood Initiative. He now works for Crew. His wife's a Shakespeare scholar. I don't know. He's one of those guys. Tory Honors at Biola is one of those guys. Prerequisites for adulthood. This is for Americans. unintentional, but these are the ones. Turning 18, leaving home, financial independence, and then earning sex. And you could just add for earning sex, for Christians, marriage as a prerequisite for that. But those are the four kind of reliable metrics for American youth to be like, am I an adult yet? Which is why the average age for American men and women, well, so for men, it's 34, and for women, it's 32. When they would sell, they would say that I feel like an adult, and I feel like society acknowledges me as an adult. So that's insane. That's like 20 years late. So I think it's, I think that should just speak to us where it's like, if you aren't intentional about rites of passage, that is what they will believe. It's not like a, because that's just what it is. So we have to be more intentional about that. This is a whole other talk, but biblical and anthropological like consensus would say there's kind of four metrics for maturity where it's different from when you're in a kid, when you're a kid to when you're an adult. And this is part of Peter David Gross's work, but authority, so that's greater responsibility and stewardship. So the idea that as you're a kid, your authority is appropriately restricted by your parents, and you're given little things like take the trash out or things like that, that if you fail, you won't die. But over time, that as you're getting closer to adulthood, there should be huge shifts in more responsibility, more authority. That's linked to liberty, which is the freedom to choose and deal with the consequences. This is something Nat and I have dealt with Lily, where I think our style, we were like really wanting to give Lily a lot of choice, a lot of freedom. And we were realizing like for her, too, it was too much for certain things. And so it's appropriate for us as parents to restrict that. But there has to come a point, probably earlier than later, where we're like, it's you. Like, you have to make these choices. This is for you to deal with the consequences of. And we want to appropriately feed you more liberty and authority as you grow. And you should know when that's expanded or reduced based on your maturity. Mystery. So moments of truth being revealed or unknown, or unknown things being acknowledged. So it would be like you're... child discovers a new thing. It should be celebrated. You were just revealed truth. That's amazing. Or you just realized mom and dad don't have the answer to that question, and we're not confident anyone does. Like, why do good things, like the problem of evil, right? There's a lot of mystery in that. There's good answers, and we need to have those too. But at the end of the day, it's kind of like we have to hold sovereign God, our human choice in sin, and corrupt evil in the world. Like, we have to hold that together. And there's answers, theological answers to that, but there's still a lot of mystery to it. It's appropriate to not expose my five-year-old to that mystery. That it's okay for me to be like, it's going to be okay. God is in control. But eventually, God is in control becomes a Christian cliche when you're 40 years old and there's a health scare, right? So I think as adults, we become more able to hold mystery. And then identity, who you are and how others treat you or acknowledge you as. So this is obviously a big one where earlier and earlier, the more exposed they are to social media and things like that, or just the world in general, but kids are already asking the question, like, who am I to my parents? Who am I to my friends? Who am I to my church family? Who am I? And we get to offer them, you are at the very least seen and you are known and loved, and I'm not going to forsake you by me and by God, right? And parents should give them that until our kids leave home. But there is a point at which we need to say, like, you kind of got to, like, ask that question to God and your peers and other people and help you kind of figure that out. But they need help. Like, I think the idea, obviously, we're aware of the sphere of culture that's like, you are how you feel at as early as possible. And that's just not true. We're so shaped by how God made us, wired us personality-wise, things like that, and by our environment that we're in. And that's where things like school choice and all those kind of stuff, like, those are the interesting questions where it's like, how do we want to help appropriately help our kids develop a, not self-esteem per se, but a mature sense of self? And a lot of that comes just from relational connection with us and with community and those kind of things. But all of those things are, I think, fun to think about. Like, how do we think about rites of passages that increase those things appropriately over time? So that's where I think, like, I have three daughters, so I don't get to celebrate the boner, but I get to celebrate the menstrual cycle. And, like, I'm down for, like, a week-long trip once Lily has her period and, like, talk about being a woman and whatever it is, and I won't be there and whatever it is. But I think, like, I'm just throwing things out. But, like, I think there's something to, like, the natural things of life, like, making them, celebrating them, and then intentional things where it's, like, maybe your family has a family cabin in somewhere really cool, and you make it a rite of passage to, like, one night you're the dad and your son get to, like, go out in the woods, or dad and all the kids, and, like, camp in distance of the cabin, like, for a night or whatever it is. And that's a rite of passage when you're 11 that happens, because at 11, we want you to know that, like, you could be further away from home and you're going to be okay. Like, thinking of the different values that you have and getting creative about how they are. Or, like, birthdays are, like, a really key thing. So pick ahead of time, or just come up with it on the spot based on how your kid is. But I think big marker points are, like, you could go even numbers. You can go, like, I think 13 is a big one where, like, have a bar mitzvah or a version of that. Like, I would love to see more of our families. We've had, like, one of the coolest things that a lot of families do, and I think they just get it word of mouth, but something on the 13th birthday with, like, council of men or women, and it's, like, prayer. And I think that's, like, it's one of the coolest things to be a part of for other people. And then, but it's also super formative, and really cool. So rites of passage are big, and I think as a community we need to think of, like, what are our rites of passage that we all want to be like, let's do this together. Baby dedication is, like, technically a rite of passage for you as a parent for your kids. So we have things, but not everything needs to be programmatized. Going to camp for the first time, like, that's a big rite of passage. You're sending them off with young leaders and hoping that they hear the gospel and, like, all that kind of stuff. So it's getting more and more intentional about that. Maybe the night before their first sleepaway trip in fourth or fifth grade, you have a dinner and you've already packed because we do pre-trip check-ins now. And you can just have a dinner together and sit together and talk about it and pray for them. And, like, it's just being more intentional about it. And it doesn't require any skill beyond what you already have. It doesn't require, maybe you're super type A and you have to sit down and map it out a year in advance, but you could do it, like, the day before and be like, we're having dinner tomorrow. How about we ask intentional questions? But the further out you go, you can build up anticipation and excitement. And honestly, I'm just ready for all our cool rites of passages for Lily to be like, I don't want to be there for it. And we're going to be like, but you have to be, and we're doing it, and you'll appreciate it later kind of thing. So I don't think that, like, how many of the, like, 13-year-old prayer circles were all crying, and they're like, can I go hang with my friends now? But I can guarantee you 10 years from then, when they look at the blocks that are on their dorm room desk, they're like, dang. Or when they get their postcards from their youth leaders and they have those, like, it's all a part of it. So I think thinking intentionally about that's really important. Okay. Faith and community, rule of life, immersion in scripture and prayer, wisdom with technology, holy sexuality, and meaningful rites of passage. Nat and I are thinking about these with our family. I'm thinking about it for our church as a whole. How do we help equip one another and think about and have conversations? Quick plug, April 26th, Sunday, we're partnering with Roots Church that meets at Fieldwork, and they're having a guy, Doug Smith. He's, like, a software engineer and I think a professor of some sort, and he's going to talk about technology in the home and then a second session on AI specifically. And he's more on the, like, raise the alarm about AI side. And there's other people, like an Andy Crouch, would be more on AI as a tool side. But for sure, it'll be really good to at least initiate conversations. It'll be a perspective that's helpful. So April 26th, there's childcare. It's from 3 to 7 or 4 to 7. 3 to 7, 4 to 7. It's like a conference, and it'll be here. So that's one of the initiatives that we're thinking about. Okay, are there time for questions? Okay. Great. Sorry, I just talked a lot. Maria.
How often would you recommend doing, like, a date night check-in /, like, when you say you do, like, a missional statement for your family, like, would you do that, like, once a quarter or, like, more often than that? Or obviously there's, like, bigger, broader things.
Yeah.
So
before kids, we had a couple from our church suggest a quarterly retreat just to, like, be together, and that's what we would do. We've not been great at our quarterly retreats, but we probably do like twice a year now. And even if it's like go to coffee for 2 hours and you know that that day is going to be like, let's go through our family rule of life and mission statement and talk about things. It's always really good. I don't know if you have anything to add to that, but yeah, that was an ask.
Like the running document is really interesting because we can look at it and we're like, oh, January of 2018, we were praying for this. Like, that's so weird. Now we have 3 kids.
But yeah.
I don't know. It's just like really cool to have a running document and be like, we were thinking about this before we even had kids. And like, we didn't know anything about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But also, so.
For sure.
If it's consistent enough where even if it's once a year, it's going to grow your rule of life.
Yeah. We just have a working Google Doc with comments on it of like dates so it doesn't change. And it is like a timestamp where it's like, oh, we were praying to like get pregnant. And they're like, oh, wow, we're like praying about birth trauma. And then we're like, oh, wow, we're like, yeah, figuring out like how to do a lot of things. So, but it is fun to look back at and we could do it more. So. Yeah, and I've never heard that from her, so grandparent dinners, you need those in your rule of life, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you help me understand, so the 5 that you guys have is what, it's rooted in your mission statement. I guess I'm trying to figure out how everything originates. So you came up with a mission statement first, and then your 5 that work for your family that you're also, I mean, obviously good for everyone, but would you say it would be different depending on your family and depending on what your statement.
Yeah. So these 5 actually aren't in our mission statement. These are 5 like that I've thought about for our church and that are just like kind of a part of how I think about it for a family. But our mission statement's like we have a like yeah, this feels vulnerable, but
like the pillars that create your family.
Yeah, so it's like, well, I was going to pull it up cuz I'm like I should have it by memory, but the
our family's like right in the thick of like creating those pillars to create, but it's such a big, for me, it's like, oh, this is so big.
Yeah.
That sometimes we just get lost and like, there's so many good things.
Yeah.
And then, but like, I want to make it more concise and clear and like create like a roadmap.
Yeah.
Like, okay, then based off of that, then we can create this like Google Doc that we're working off of, but maybe I'm thinking too linear.
I think it's so dependent on how you and your husband operate, because like, I think I can imagine this looking so many different ways, and like depending on how detail oriented you guys are together, like.
So your family pillars might be different than these 5.
They are different. Yeah, these are just like things that I think as a community we should be thinking about together, but I mean not that they're not in here, but I'll just read it. So. Our mission statement is, in view of God's mercy and as Christ's ambassadors, our mission is to become the kind of people who love God and others in a way that would bring our home, our community, and the world peace, hope, and joy in Jesus. So pretty generic, like any Christian could say that's our mission statement. And then we have our values, which would be love God above all, love each other and others, marriages for life, mom and dad lead our family and help me grow, be grateful, do what is right and tell the truth, seek truth, be prayerful, forgive and encourage, practice healthy habits, be responsible and generous with God's money. So we could do a better job actually, like, now I feel like we should, like Lily should know these, and, like, we should start talking about them more. But that's what we came up with a long time ago, and then.
Maybe we should have an event where we have childcare and we get, like, a little workshop where we can all do this with our husband Matt.
Yeah, I know there was Legacy. I know Legacy Makers, if you went to that, did a version of that. You did it.
Great.
Yeah, it was really good. Yeah, so I think, well, I think we could do like, a follow-up. Yeah, I think that's where it's like, Legacy Makers, I'm not super familiar with how they like frame the like how you make the craft it, but just the idea of doing one. I think it's like doing it is more important than what it looks like. But like just the process of doing it is like, oh wow, like
it brings up so much.
Yeah. And you can get creative, have fun with it. Like we have four pillars of wisdom, courage, character, and hope that are like our like family thing. I made a family logo that's yet to make it on anything. But it's just like fun to But part of it was like I was so intentional with like our youth ministry and these things. And I was like, if I'm not this with my family, then that's lame. So anyways. Marriages for Life comment, 2021. Natalie, I asked her to honor me and show confidence in me. And Natalie asked me to serve and pursue her in big and small ways. That's my note. 2021. Look how we've grown.
I like that too, because it becomes more of like topics of conversation.
Yeah. Right.
It's an ongoing journey.
Yeah.
Constantly, like, intentionally checking, which I haven't heard of before, which is
like that. And it creates, like, a measure of success in a way.
Accountability. Yeah, and I think, like, even the titles that we have here, it started with scriptures we picked out and then, like, a general statement that didn't feel super, like there's a value. And then I think like over time we just were like, oh, this is like marriages for life. And then we pursue a marriage that reflects Christ's love for his church was what we started with, because that was Ephesians. Mm-hmm. And then marriages for life was the thing. And then as we had kids, it was like, it used to be mom, or it was, we raise our kids. We didn't have kids yet. And then, but even crafting them where I'm like, how could I pass something on to like, that Lily and Sage could memorize, so it became mom and dad lead our family and help me grow like that. So I think that's something, but we haven't done one in a while, so we should do one soon. Yes.
How much of this stuff, like, have you guys discerned is to be shown and to be talked about?
I think of it, yeah. Well, I think, like, don't talk about it if you don't show it kind of thing. Like, I think really well-meaning parents of junior hires and high schoolers over the years, and obviously now, like, kids, like, there's these expectations about how their kids should treat their phone. And then it's like, but they don't model that. Or so that's like, I think prioritizing, like, show it before you share it. But at the same time, like, it's kind of like the cliche with, like, you got to show the gospel, don't just talk about it. It's like, well, you still got to talk about it. Like, you still got to, like, share it with people. But definitely, if you share it and you don't show it, then there's hypocrisy there. But then I think you're just honest about what it is. And also, I mean, I find it really hard to be like, when, like, there has to be a way for these things to come out in, like, the normal, like, there can't be a set-aside moment for every conversation. I mean, that should be the dinner table, but that is really hard too. Young kids, you're like trying to get them to eat. But like sometimes it's like, if you get 1 out of 10, where it's like, we had a meaningful conversation about, whatever it is, or like, getting walked in on in the shower and you get to share about your body with your kid. Like, those are the ones where, versus like, okay, it's sex talk day. I think sex talks days need to happen. But that's where I've thought about, like, what if we as a church were like, every February we know that our church in the home, we're talking about sexuality. Like, and maybe there's like a night where we gather together and talk about it, but it's like, we know, like I knew growing up that like every February it was sex month and we talked about sex and like everything was about our bodies and about desire and about, or yeah, or whatever it is. And or anything, like it could be like, yeah, we do September's truth seeking month, and cause it's the beginning of school and everything we do, we're like, we're doing oriented towards that or whatever it is. But, yeah, I mean, I'm so much more ambitious in my mind with these things, and then being up here, like it feels like I'm like, we got this, and then I have the same reality that all of you do, which is, I have little children that don't want to do what I'm asking them to do. So, but I think that like that's not bad at all. Like I think, like I would rather do all these things and my kid roll their eyes every time, and then but like they're gonna catch it. Like they. Because it's more compelling. Like, it's so much more compelling than unintentionality. And, like, I want it to not even have to be, like, you could, like, fine, like, go join a sorority in college, but that sorority is going to suck compared to our house. Like, I want that to be the feeling, not like a, I mean, I want to say don't join a sorority, but first, make it more compelling to be whatever. You can, yeah. Bronwyn Tosh, Navigators at UW. She's great. She's in sorority life.